Hello and welcome to Science World.
Like a dancer, like a ballroom dancer, the moon spins around the Earth at exactly the same rate as it spins around itself. So it always maintains the same face towards its companion, Earth.
When you look at the moon at night, do you ever wonder, why can't I ever see the far side of the moon? Why always the same view? Scientists at Caltech think they have an answer for that. Asian businessmen are getting through the language barrier thanks to a smartphone app. And scientists say that a drug commonly used to treat malaria and rheumatoid arthritis has also proved effective in treating some aggressive cancers. These stories and more next on VOA Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. A Thai software company says it has developed an application for smartphones aimed at overcoming language barriers among business people in Asia. The ASEAN One application, or app, promotes communications and business among countries in the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Daniel Scharf reports from Bangkok.
The ASEAN One application will translate about 100 useful phrases into the 10 languages of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, as well as English. The Thai company developing the software, Ignite Asia, says it is aimed mainly at frequent business travelers. CEO Jirat Pawaratana says if successful, they will expand the application's capabilities.
The language would be the main theme. But from apart from language, you would have like currency, directories, map and everything.
Head of Marketing Nataporn Buawatana says it will also be a useful tool for students studying a neighboring country's language.
So we intend to penetrate the market by using the university connection, and another one is through the government support.
The Thai company says it hopes ASEAN countries promote the application as a tool that can help ASEAN's goal of forming an economic community by 2015. ASEAN One is expected to be released around June and will be paid for through advertising, making it free for consumers. Daniel Scharf, VOA News, Bangkok.
Researchers say a drug commonly used to treat malaria and rheumatoid arthritis has also proved effective in treating some aggressive cancers. Vidushi Sinha has more.
Scientists know that human cancer cells grow by getting energy from adjacent tumors, where cells have begun to self-destruct. The spread of cancer is accelerated by the death of these cells.
This process called autophagy, which literally means to self-eat, is present in all cells, but what we're finding in our research is that cancer cells have a very high level of autophagy, even before any treatment. And so they are poised to take on the damage from existing cancer therapies and simply break down the damaged parts and recycle them to fuel further growth.
Dr. Ravi Amravadi spoke to us via Skype. He is a cancer specialist at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. His group treated patients by combining conventional cancer medications with the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine. The compound is known to inhibit autophagy, and researchers hoped it could stop cancer cells from growing. In clinical trials, scientists found that hydroxychloroquine paired poorly with some cancer drugs, but it worked well with others, such as temsirolimus, in helping to halt tumor growth, a so-called stable disease rate in patients with melanoma and aggressive skin cancer.
Melanoma is one of the most aggressive cancers. And when temsirolimus was tested in melanoma, it had a 0% stable disease rate. When we combined it with hydroxychloroquine, the malaria drug, the stable disease rate went up to 76%. So that's a very big difference.
Researchers used a high dose of hydroxychloroquine to block autophagy, much higher than what's normally used to treat malaria. The doses has not yet proved harmful. Dr. David Ruggiero at the University of California, San Francisco, is also studying the growth of cancer cells. He says the results of the research with hydroxychloroquine are promising.
This has been somehow a great, of course, discovery, because we know that this compounds are not toxic, has been already used.
But Dr. Amravadi warns that oncologists should not use the anti-malaria drug outside of clinical settings. He says hydroxychloroquine has severe side effects when combined with some cancer drugs. So the knowledge of which compounds work well together is critical. Vidushi Sinha, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science World on VOA. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
Researchers have found a way to turn small living things such as snails, cockroaches, and mushrooms into electronic cyborgs, implanting them with tiny biofuel cells that draw and store electrical power from the organism's metabolic processes. Jessica Berman reports.
It started in 2003 with a grape. Chemical engineer Adam Heller and his colleagues at the University of Texas, Austin, implanted a biofuel cell, a special kind of microbattery, into a grape and demonstrated that it could generate and store electricity by harnessing the energy of the fruit's natural metabolic processes, chemical reactions involving glucose and oxygen. The cell produced about 2.4 microwatts of electricity. Heller originally envisioned using implanted biofuel cells for medical applications, for example, as thermometers located at wound sites to monitor increases in temperature caused by inflammation, or as targeted nerve stimulators, but the devices were never developed. French scientists have taken up where Heller left off. They're working on biocompatible fuel cells that could draw on the glucose and oxygen in circulating human blood to power low-energy medical devices such as pacemakers and urinary sphincters for incontinent patients. Evgeny Katz and his team at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York, are taking this cyborg technology in another direction. The researchers have implanted biofuel cells into tiny brown garden snails, says Katz. The idea is to tap the energy of the snail to power a variety of micro devices, some with military applications, such as remote sensors that can monitor environmental toxins or transmit images of people coming and going.
For example, gas sensors, video cameras, and then we can use some kind of wireless transmitting devices to feed the information.
The electrified snails are hardy and low maintenance, munching on carrots to provide a steady trickle of power for months. All plants and animals use glucose and oxygen for energy. Biofuel cells tap into this biochemical dynamo using two electrodes, which are thinner than a human hair and a few millimeters apart. Katz says the electrodes transfer electrons to the cells through two microcircuits, one that breaks down glucose and the other that converts oxygen into water.
If you can do it fast enough, if you do it efficiently enough, so then you extract electrical power.
The challenge, says Katz, is figuring out how to transmit cyborg electricity to sensing devices. Biofuel cells have also been implanted into beetles and cockroaches. Electrochemist Daniel Scherson of Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, is spearheading that work. Researchers have created a device that controls the roach's physical movements using the insect's own nervous system. Now they want to implant biofuel cells into the roaches so the insects could be used to operate sensing devices capable of detecting poisonous agents like sarin gas. Scherson says it might someday be possible to wire tree sap for threats to the environment.
And then you can draw power from the sap for all materials that may be a threat to society.
Shearson's team is currently working to implant biofuel cells into shiitake mushrooms. The cyborg research has received funding from the U.S. Department of Defense. Studies on biofuel cells by Daniel Shearson of Case Western Reserve University and Evgeny Katz of Clarkson University were published in the Journal of the American Chemical Society. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
For decades, groups in the U.S. have fought to lower drunk driving fatalities. But for the past 10 or 15 years, the number of drunk driving deaths has remained the same. Researchers are now working on technologically advanced safety features for cars that could potentially eliminate drunk drivers in America. Mona Rabi has the story.
Betty Jones lost her son, 37-year-old Sean Jones, in a drunk driving accident in 2005. Since then, she has displayed his high school graduation picture in the family living room.
He loved to talk, loved to tell jokes.
Sean was at a red light when a drunk driver, speeding at 87 miles an hour, slammed into his car, killing him instantly.
The next morning, two state troopers came to the door and told us that Sean had been killed by a drunk driver. It was the most devastating thing, I think, that I have ever experienced.
Nearly 11,000 people die each year in drunk driving accidents on America's roads. That's one person every 50 minutes. Advocates of anti-drunk driving measures say education, awareness, and laws aren't making enough of a difference. So they're turning to cutting-edge sensor technology developed after 9/11 to completely eliminate drunk driving deaths once and for all. One prototype uses infrared sensors installed around the cabin to detect blood alcohol levels in the driver's breath. The other, a touch sensor on the steering wheel or dashboard, detects alcohol levels through the skin. In both cases, if the driver is beyond the legal limit to drive, the car simply won't start.
Years ago, when my daughter was killed by a drunk driver, I really believed that if I just went out and told people the tragic effects that this has on one's life, that people wouldn't do it. I learned very quickly that that doesn't affect people.
Jan Withers heads Mothers Against Drunk Driving, a leading advocate of anti-drunk driving laws. She calls this new technology the ultimate vaccine for drunk driving.
Over all the years, with all the different laws we've passed, it hasn't ended drunk driving. And so now, with this advanced technology, literally, we have the vision of having no more people affected by this horrible tragedy.
Researchers say it may be a decade before the new technology is perfected, but its advocates want automakers to voluntarily install this new technology into every new car on the road as a routine safety feature once it becomes available. If that were to happen, they say, drunk driving deaths in the U.S. would eventually become just a footnote in the nation's past. Mona Rabi, VOA News, Washington.
Mind-altering compounds such as LSD first stirred controversy in the 1960s as the counterculture's psychedelic drug of choice. The widespread use and abuse of hallucinogens prompted tougher anti-drug laws and a crackdown, too, on clinical studies of the drug's complex psychological effects. But as Adam Phillips reports, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, in recent years has begun to approve limited research into the potential benefits of psychedelic drugs.
No one is more aware of the stigma attached to psychedelics than Rick Doblin, the director of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS. It's a drug development firm that funds FDA-approved clinical trials into the potential therapeutic uses of psychedelics. Doblin says the virtual blackout on research that resulted from aggressive federal drug control policies in the 1960s finally began to ease in 1990, when new regulators at the FDA decided to take a fresh look at psychedelic drugs.
And they decided that they would put science over politics and permit research to go forward. They were willing to acknowledge that these drugs could be administered in a safe enough context and that they were promising hints of potential benefits and therapeutic uses. Today, there's more psychedelic research taking place than at any time in the last 40 years.
One especially active focus of FDA-approved research has involved MDMA, also known as ecstasy. This potent drug is being studied for its potential therapeutic value for sex abuse victims and combat veterans suffering from chronic, treatment-resistant post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Dr. Michael Mithofer, a leading researcher in this area, conducted small FDA-approved clinical trials using MDMA and a placebo. He found that the drug, when administered in tandem with psychotherapy, could help patients more easily recall traumatic but long-buried memories.
So what we're seeing with the MDMA is that it seems to allow people to access the trauma, revisit it with a sense that they're not going to be overwhelmed by the fear and anxiety, but at the same time, helps them to overcome whatever emotional numbing they may have so they can connect with the emotions and process the trauma that way.
The word psychedelic literally means mind manifesting. Psychologist Neil Goldsmith is the author of Psychedelic Healing, a survey of the many uses that have been found for these powerful psychoactive drugs. He says some psychedelics have proved helpful in couples therapy and as aids to meditation and other spiritual practices.
From my perspective, psychedelics bring us awareness that our deepest, truest nature is healthy, whole, perfect, loving. So it's a very interesting time now where we're rediscovering our spiritual natures through a scientific method.
The link between psychedelics and spirituality has been of special interest to Roland Griffiths, a behavioral biologist at Johns Hopkins University. In two FDA-approved experiments, his research team gave large doses of psilocybin to carefully screened volunteers. They were placed in a pleasant, home-like laboratory environment, outfitted with eye shades to avoid distractions, and given headphones through which they could listen to music. Griffiths wanted to see if the psilocybin could induce spiritual experiences similar to those mystics have reported as a natural result of meditation and prayer. Griffiths says that in almost every case, the psychedelic triggered a profound sense of spirituality.
That is an experience of the interconnectedness of all peoples, an experience that's permeated with a sense of the sacred, a sense of heart opening or infinite love, a collapse of time and space, and perhaps most importantly, a sense that the experience is more real and more true than everyday waking consciousness. There's an authenticity to these types of experiences that make them incredibly salient, even a year later, to people.
Griffiths acknowledges that some people do not respond well to psychedelic drugs. Fear and confusion, coupled with physical discomfort, dizziness, or nausea, can create an unpleasant, even terrifying experience. Griffiths doesn't advocate the unsupervised use of these powerful drugs, but he believes that in the hands of properly trained professionals, psychedelics are a valuable and still largely unexplored tool for healing and understanding the human mind. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Science World. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
When you look up at the moon at night, you see the same familiar image time after time. Some even say you can even see a man in the moon. But did you ever think of why we never get to see the other side or the far side of the moon? Why always the same view? Well, it turns out, according to recent research conducted at the California School of Technology, that way back in the past, the moon spun around on its axis much faster than it does today. The fact that the same side of the moon always faces us may be the result of the rate at which the moon slowed down before becoming locked into its current orientation. Dr. Odette Aronson, professor of planetary science at Caltech, along with his colleagues, have conducted some research into these questions and have released the results of their studies in a new paper that was recently published online in the journal Icarus. Dr. Aronson joins us for this week's one-on-one segment, and he shares what he and his colleagues found from their research into the moon's past and why it looks like it does to us. Professor, why is it that we always wind up seeing the same side of the moon all the time?
The reason why we always see the same side of the moon is because, like a dancer, like a ballroom dancer, the moon spins around the Earth at exactly the same rate as it spins around itself. So it always maintains the same face towards its companion, Earth.
I understand the moon maintains a synchronous orbit around Earth?
Yeah, so the word synchronous there, the moon maintains a synchronous orbit. That means that its spin around its own axis is synchronized with its revolution around the Earth.
Some have thought that we see a particular side of the moon at random. In other words, what we see is just happens to be what it is, or by coincidence. You and your colleague have found otherwise. Could you explain?
The moon is shaped a little bit like an ellipse, or actually an ellipsoid. It has three axes, and each one of them is a little bit different. So you can imagine the moon is shaped a little bit like a football, and you can ask, the moon definitely wants to spin with the long axis of the football facing the Earth. But there are still two ways in which it could do that. It could either face the Earth with one side of the long axis or with the other side of the long axis towards Earth. And the question is it 50-50 which side faces the Earth, or as we have found in our research, is there a preference for one side or the other? What we found is, indeed, there is a preference for one side or the other, and it depends on the two sides of the moon being asymmetric. The side facing us is filled with dark mare basalts, which are dense and low. They're closer to the moon's center of mass, whereas the other side of the moon, the side that we don't see, has been imaged with spacecrafts that have flown around the moon, and we know that there are mountains on the other side of the moon that are a little bit lighter and taller than the basins on the near side of the moon. So in fact, if the moon flipped around, there'd be a little bit more mass, a little bit closer to Earth, because those mountains are higher, so they would come a little bit closer to Earth than the current near side of the moon is. And the moon would actually be in a lower energy state than it is today, which you would think, naturally, the moon might prefer. It turns out that the way the moon actually locked into its current configuration, the process of locking actually prefers facing the near side to Earth rather than the far side.
I'm curious, Professor, you're describing both sides of the moon as looking completely different from each other. Why such a difference in terrain?
There are some ideas about what causes the two sides of the moon to look very different, but actually we still don't quite know why it is that the moon is so asymmetric, why one side of the moon is so different from the other one.
Now, one time, the moon spun on a faster axis than it does now. So basically, people, if there were people at the time, any inhabitants of Earth at the time, would definitely see different sides of the moon.
That's right. When the moon first accreted around Earth, it's the mass of the moon first collected around the Earth. We now think that the moon, by the way, formed from a very large impact. Something big hit the Earth, ripped a chunk of Earth out, and some of the original impactor material collected together under its own gravity in orbit and formed the moon. And when that happened, the moon was closer to Earth, and it spun a lot faster. So somebody looking up at the sky would actually see different sides of the moon on different nights.
Study has shown that the rotation speed, we were just talking about that, the rotation speed of the moon has slowed down over time. Now, what caused this to happen?
What causes the moon to slow down? A process called tidal dissipation. What happens is the moon raises tides on Earth. We're all familiar with those tides. That's the ocean sloshing around from side to side as the moon orbits Earth. But the Earth also raises tides on the moon. So the moon changes shape ever so slightly as a result of Earth's gravity. And because the moon, when it's not synchronous, its shape has to change all the time. The process of its deformation, sort of like taking a spoon and bending it back and forth many, many times, that process of deforming the spoon would heat it up. The same way the moon changing shape dissipates energy, which is ultimately dissipated in the form of heat, and takes the energy in the rotation of the moon and reduces it.
Is the rotation continuing to slow down, or is it pretty much where it's going to be?
No, it's pretty much where it's going to be in the sense that it goes around Earth once a month, and it also goes around its own axis once a month, and it's happy there because now it doesn't have to change shape anymore, so it doesn't dissipate any more energy. What is happening is that it is evolving outwards, so right now its orbit takes once a month, but if we continue to look at the system into the future, then like other binary systems in the solar system, what would we expect to see is that both objects would synchronize to each other. So eventually Earth's rotation would also synchronize to the moon's orbit around it, such that Earth would feel no more tides, no more changing tides by the moon. So if we look way well into the future, we will have a double synchronous system where both the Earth and the moon are always facing the same side towards each other. Right now, only the moon is constantly facing us, but it sees our back. Someday into the future, the moon will only see Earth's face as well.
That was Dr. Oded Aronson, Professor of Planetary Science at the California Institute of Technology, or Caltech, in Pasadena, California. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more, so stop by and visit us on the Internet. The address again is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.